Have y'all seen Bull Durham? Susan Sarandon plays Annie Savoy. And here's what Annie says about baseball. I believe in the Church of Baseball. I've tried all the major religions and most of the minor ones. I've worshipped Buddha, Allah, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, trees, mushrooms, and Isadora Duncan. I know things. For instance, there are 108 beads in a Catholic rosary, and there are 108 stitches in a baseball. When I learned that, I gave Jesus a chance. But it just didn't work out between us. The Lord laid too much guilt on me. I prefer metaphysics to theology. You see, there's no guilt in baseball, and it's never boring. So here's what I want to tell you about that reading before we sing Sweet Caroline. Baseball fandom, the reason that I'm choosing a church service to talk about baseball is that baseball fandom transcends the divisive restraints of politics and religion. Baseball fandom is a reflection of the game itself in important ways. The team is big, with each position having people available and ready to provide relief. The team does not forget about people when they get put on the IL, injured list, and information is shared openly, within permission, on the medical situations of everyone who's on the IL. Fandoms have inside talk, alphabet soup, if you will, that is exclusive or restricting to newbies, but accessible enough if you're interested. For instance, the IL used to be the DL, or disabled list. But in 2019, with an eye toward healthier, more progressive, and accurate language, our insider talk changed. Just like in a church service, where we have our own alphabet soup, and yes, we do that about RE and about GA and about the UUA. Also, just like church, we have our music. Sometimes folks new to our service will know a tune, but the lyrics have been changed, or a folk song has been included in the hymnal, or within different congregations, specific music might be particularly meaningful. Baseball, as a resilient community itself, has its insider music. When we visit a ballpark and learn about their traditions, whichever side we're rooting for, it brings the ballpark together. In Boston at Fenway, when the Sox win, Dirty Water by the Standells is played. At Yankee Stadium, it's New York, New York, sung by Frank Sinatra. Anyone at these cathedrals of the Church of Baseball expect to hear those songs. In those instances, baseball itself, not just opposing baseball fandoms, unites people. Some of the music is not just about winning or losing. Resilient communities give us opportunities to stretch, like we did in the prelude, and to experience embodied joy in a world where most of us live in our heads. Neil Diamond recorded Sweet Caroline in 1969, having no documented references to the Red Sox whatsoever. Maybe or maybe not, as legends go, maybe he wrote it years after his brain imprinted these images that stuck with him of sweetness, like Caroline Kennedy as a child on a cover of a magazine, or his wife with a breeze in her hair. And he wrote the song that has nothing to do with baseball. Legend has it that one day at Fenway, the cameras picked up that Caroline Kennedy, beloved child of Massachusetts royal family, was in the ballpark. Next time the camera picked her up, the audiovisual team was ready with Sweet Caroline over the speakers. It caught on. Since 2002, it is established as a tradition for everyone to sing, calling out the background parts like bum, 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 and so good, so good, so good, in the middle of the eighth inning. Baseball, as a resilient community, has these ways to bring people together, deeply or momentarily. In 2013, after the April bombings in Boston, the New York Yankees, a rival fandom, but still a part of the resilient community, played Sweet Caroline in their ballpark in the middle of the eighth inning. It was a show of solidarity for Boston as a city and for its Red Sox fandom. Even though the fandom's rivalry between the Red Sox and the Yankees is well known, and friends, it is a real thing, humanity rises above sports rivalry and divisiveness. So I invite us to sing the song together. In terms of this church service, it's just about the middle of the eighth inning. When I told Colleen that we were going to do a thing about baseball, she immediately said, "Will I get to learn Sweet Caroline?" So I'm going to invite us to do our best to rise and sing in the middle of this eighth inning Sweet Caroline. The words are on the board, and they will be, and you know what to do. You may have noticed there are a lot of readings and songs because baseball is America's pastime. So when I spoke to one of the men I live with about Hank's the other one, and he's online. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm saying. I said, "Kevin, what would you contribute?" And he said, "Oh, the George Carlin piece."
Yes. I'm guessing most of you all are familiar with George Carlin. Okay. All right. And before I start talking about this, how many of you remember where you were in October of 1986? Okay. in my lifetime, that was the first time I ever remember watching the Red Sox play in the World Series. Now, granted, they made it in 1975, but I was a wee lad of 3 years old and not interested in such things at that age. And after they blew Game 6 and after they blew Game 7 and after they blew the World Series, the vice principal of my middle school, as I that was the fall I started 8th grade, came on the loudspeaker and he gave announcements, and at the end he said, "And alas, there is no joy in Mudville." I'll never forget that. All right, so this is the George Carlin bit where he compares baseball to football. "I enjoy comparing baseball to football. Baseball is a 19th century pastoral game. Football is a 20th century technological struggle. Baseball is played on a diamond, in a park, a baseball park. Football is played on a gridiron in a stadium, War Memorial Stadium. Baseball begins in the spring, the season of new life. Football begins in the fall, when everything is dying. In football, you wear a helmet. In baseball, you wear a cap. Football is concerned with downs. What down is it? Are you down? Baseball's concerned with ups. Who's up? Who's up next? In football, you receive a penalty. In baseball, you make an error. In football, the specialist comes in to kick. In baseball, the specialist comes in to relieve somebody. Football has hitting, clipping, spearing, piling on, personal fouls, late hitting, and unnecessary roughness. Baseball has the sacrifice. Football is played in any kind of weather, rain, snow, sleet, hail, fog. In baseball, if it rains, we don't come out to play. Baseball has a seventh-inning stretch. Football has the two-minute warning. Baseball has no time limit. We don't know when it's going to end. We might even have extra innings. In fact, we had that the other night when they played 13 innings. Football is rigidly timed and will end even if we've got to go to sudden death. And finally, the objectives of the games are completely different. In football, the object is for the quarterback, also known as the field general, to be on target with his aerial assault, ridding the defense by hitting his receivers with deadly accuracy in spite of the blitz, even if he has to use shotgun. With short bullet passes and long bombs, he marches his troops into enemy territory, balancing this aerial assault with a sustained ground attack that punches holes in the forward wall of the enemy's defensive line. In baseball, the object is to go home. And to be safe at home. Thank you, George Carlin.
Probably not going to have football sermons. Oh, sports. To be an athlete or a fan can be purposeful, giving our lives a focus that for some is a career, and most of us, a chance to be passionate about something other than work. My whole life, I looked for somewhere to hold safely the love I had to offer as a sports fan. Living in a suburb of Washington, D.C., I had a football team to root for, but the team name was so racist that it became too weird and problematic to be their fan, and their owner was a jerk. Still, though, I fondly remember practicing my throw so that as a kid and only girl in my neighborhood elementary school gang, we could adapt the football rules so that I was the quarterback for both teams. I only threw and was never tackled. The nearest baseball team was almost 2 hours away in Baltimore. The Orioles were never able to become that container for my admiration. When I moved to Maine 30 years ago and discovered Red Sox Nation, I was hooked. Just in case you all think that I'm just a fan because Kevin is, when we met and he said, What did you do that weekend that you moved here all by yourself? I said, I went to a Blue Ox game over in Orono. And he said, I love you. I recall suggesting to Kevin that Pedro and Nomar make fine baby names. Baseball as a sport had always touched me. Softball was always there for girls, but I loved the grandeur of Major League Baseball far more than just for the players. I've lived my life only watching men play baseball, so I'm happy to be alive during this time, during this year, when we have the launch of the professional women's team. Back when I was a retail store manager and trainer, I organized inter-store baseball games for us to meet up at area parks and play. No, the employees were not paid for playing. My fellow store managers accused me of hiring people not for their customer service skills, but for their ability to throw, pitch, bat, field, and run. I recall thinking, people can do both things, right? As I have aged and the world has changed, baseball has gotten more dear, not less. I used to like and follow football, but even after I left the D.C. area, even after the Washington team became the Commanders, the concussions, the ousting of Colin Kaepernick for respectfully taking a knee, the team that supported Michael Vick's dog abuse, and the game's sheer brutality diminished its appeal for me. It is fun and interesting and even exciting to watch the athletes on football teams, but knowing the danger they put themselves in by playing, knowing that I may have to witness it, diminishes its appeal for this peaceful pastor, preferring to listen for the crack of the bat. Baseball is more laid back, and talking with other fans in the stands is more conducive to a nice chat about history, whereas the pregame tailgating is the best part of football. For me, the likelihood of enjoying the day at a ballpark in summer, singing songs with thousands of others, is infinitely more satisfying than a stadium in November full of bloodthirsty fans. Plus, when it comes to finding a pastime to really settle into and take your time and know that you're going to have a long time, baseball provides 162 games per year compared to football's measly 17. One last difference between baseball and football as resilient communities has to do with white Christian nationalism. Haven't you missed me? In prior services, I have outlined that we are not really dealing with religion when we're talking about white Christian nationalism, but a political ideology. Maybe somebody's car got hit by a baseball. They are centered on a white warrior Jesus full of wrath for the same people that real Jesus helped and told us to help too. Real Christianity as a religion and not a political ideology centers on peace and love, whereas white Christian nationalists focus on the blood sport of smiting rivals. Football versus baseball feels to me like a choice between war and peace, the same way it feels to be a reasonable, compassionate person in the same culture as people who are white Christian nationalists. We can all use a day in the park to just relax and be non-divisive. Amid the stress and strain of current life, it is important to take time off. We have to stay so vigilant these days about our erosion of rights and the hostile, illegal takeover of our democracy, showing up for each other in public squares, making sure that the polling places stay safe. Sometimes fun gets forgotten about entirely. Plus, we are so wary of each other. It's sad, but it's understandable. It makes it hard to just take a breath and focus on anything that isn't of ultimate importance. But oh, When we do choose art or nature or laughing with a friend or cheering on some players, we are nurturing those resilience muscles and rebuilding our worn-out souls. Baseball even puts us in close proximity to people whose values are different than ours in intergenerational situations, often only seen in worship spaces. And there's nachos. Resilience is about balance and building relationships, about giving and receiving mutual aid, basic neighborliness of all sorts. Of course, when relationships deepen, stories get shared and bonds strengthen. For instance, the Red Sox, and I am talking completely about the Red Sox because it's what I know, but wherever your fandom lies, I hope that you'll hear. For instance, the Red Sox have many players from Venezuela, so when Venezuela was brutalized by back-to-back earthquakes, Red Sox Nation responded. They became aware of suffering for a nation that maybe would have gone unnoticed if it were not for seeing how devastated these players were. Professional baseball has had international players for a long time. One of Kevin's prized possessions is a signed hat from Louis Tiant. He lived and played here when his native Cuba was not safe for him. This year is the first time we have professional women's baseball. I will love to see how it goes. We all know about the history of women players from the movie A League of Their Own. But women are not the only ones who have been left out. Baseball has lessons from hour-long sinful national racism, too, detailing the struggles and the victories of the Negro League with players like Satchel Paige. Walking a fine line happens in community. So many major league players, including all of them coming up through the farm teams, a lot of them are people of color or immigrants, or they're here working on work visas. Living as we do in 2026, even at a baseball game, we are aware of ICE in the area, staying aware of the struggles for not just the players and their people, but the ballpark staff as well. When I said that sitting in the park, one is likely to encounter great history chats, I know this is true because it happens all the time. Baseball is America's sport, so there will be intersectionality about almost any topic. I have sat in parks from Little League to college to farm leagues to Fenway to other parks, and I've listened to folks talk about race, class, LGBTQ, joy, history, lift up how many generations they have had as fans, what have you. The stories, the history, all of it is why baseball nurtures resilience. So here we are at the bottom of the ninth, and I have a grand slam of a story to end our time together. There's these two old men, and they've been friends since childhood. And to be clear, because I said something earlier about old men, old is anyone 5 years older than me, right? There's these two old men, and they've been friends since childhood. They played Little League together, and then they took their families to games. In old age, they held watch parties in their senior community. One of their enduring questions they wondered about is if there is baseball in heaven. They devise a plan. Whichever one of them dies first will figure out how to come back and tell the other if there's baseball in heaven. Now, sadly, the first friend dies, and he leaves his friend wondering. But a couple weeks later, on a Sunday night, after a great church service, the living friend is awakened by the ghost of his friend at the foot of his bed. "Oh, wonderful of you to come back. Is there baseball in heaven?" And his friend says, "Good news, there is baseball in heaven. Bad news, you're pitching Thursday."